back together again to kick off Thanksgiving week, Monday, November 21st, 2022, on Connecticut Today. We featured a chat with New Haven Independent editor Paul Bass on the influence of the Working Families Party in the last round of state elections. We also had some thoughts on a proposal to increase the state's Citizens Election Program grant for a gubernatorial run to $12 million, up from $9 million. Every so often, I like to have this gentleman on because he runs one of the best online news sites, not just here in the state, but in the country, the New Haven Independent. Check it out, newhavenindependent.org. And Paul Bass is the guest. Hey, Paul, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Good. It's so great to hear your voice, man. It's been a while.
Paul, likewise here. Good to speak with you. Before we get to this great story you wrote on the effectiveness of the Working Families Party, which we discuss a lot here on this show, you gave me the high sign that you were covering today, Senator Richard Blumenthal's pronouncements on Ticketmaster and the whole Taylor Swift thing. What did he have to say? Any real news out of that, Paul, or not?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm actually really interested in what you have to say about it, Paul, because I don't go to concerts that are in big enough venues to have to go to Ticketmaster. But this thing is blown up, man. I forgot about the Ukraine war. Forgot about, COVID. It's like it's all about Taylor Swift. And I have to admit, I just started listening to music today. I don't quite get what it's all about, but people love Taylor Swift. She could just broke records on the charts.
Mm-hmm.
The first day, so many million people signed up for tickets on Ticketmaster to go to her first tour in 4 years, that it crashed the system. And by the next day, Paul, it was in the billions.
Yeah.
They got all these requests, although some of them are bots. So it crashed the system, took hours to get tickets. People don't get their refunds. So already Ticketmaster was in trouble. They merged with Live Nation and dominate the industry for what arenas have to do business with to sell tickets to get a monopoly. So the centers are after them. And this is a great issue for them because it's a kind of consumer issue that you don't really get. You don't lose any support by being for. So Blumenthal sought in a letter asking Department of Justice to undo the 2010 merger between Live Nation and Ticketmaster. And further, he announced there are going to be hearings in the Senate, probably in December, where he's going to haul the Ticketmaster executives before the cameras. And here was my favorite quote he had. He said, I don't think it's really true that Ticketmaster is blaming Taylor Smith. Taylor Swift is just saying she had such a big demand, it was more than we can handle. But Senator said they're trying to blame Taylor Swift. I'd like to see them. I'd like to see that. Let them come to the United States Congress to blame Taylor Swift. So the die's been cast. The sides are drawn. It's going to be a battle royale over Ticketmaster and concert tickets in D.C.
Yeah, and Paul, before we take a break and get to your Working Families Party story, I saw something the other day that the CEO of Ticketmaster said basically, if they were to give a ticket to everybody who wanted one in that first push, Taylor Swift would have to play stadiums every night for 2.5 years. That's the kind of demand there was.
Yep. That was one of the issues. The other issue is he says we're trying to get rid of bots. So he says, the way the scalpers get the tickets, mm-hmm. the bots, that instead of that we have you sign up and that makes it take so long. That's why it crashed. But Blumenthal is arguing that, in fact, that being a big monopoly drives the prices up because they hold back tickets. So smarter minds than mine can figure that one out.
Paul Bass is the guest, the editor of the New Haven Independent. To check them out, newhavenindependent.org. And they had a fascinating story about the strength, the growing strength, at least in some people's eyes, some people don't like it, of the Working Families Party, one of the progressive parties in the state in the last election cycle. And Paul, I still get calls on this show sometimes who say, hey, what is this Working Families Party thing? Are they a real party? Do they just cross endorse? Explain that to my listeners.
Right. So it is one of four parties that are very active in Connecticut, actually five this year, who have an agenda, like a set of issues they believe. And they try to either influence the main parties or they run their own candidates to get enough of a vote to have an impact. So Working Families Party is labor oriented. They want a higher minimum wage. They push for parental leave. They want to have millionaires taxed more and more protections for labor unions. It's kind of the flip side of what used to be the Independent Party, Paul. Mm-hmm. Remember, they'd always cross-endorse all the Republicans, and then this year they decided to run their own candidate, which made a big fight with Bob Stefanowski. So with one exception in Bridgeport, in one state Senate race, the Working Families Party pretty much just endorses Democrats, but Democrats they believe are going to advance their agenda, so they have an influence. So they endorsed 54 in Connecticut Democrats, and all of them won this year. So the question is, did they produce the margin? So you know how close the Jahana Hayes race was against Jerry Logan in Congress in the 5th District. So that was she got 4,000 votes from Working Families Party, won by 2,000. So the question is, would the candidate, would those other people have just voted for her anyway? What makes it partly complicated, Paul, is that there's no presidential race this year, so people aren't just coming out. So they claim the Working Families Party, they had other candidates they were supporting for state senate. Well, they got people out for those people who weren't going to vote. Mm-hmm. And then when they were there, they voted for Jahana Hayes. So it's an ongoing debate. The independent party was in court with Stefanowski, the Republican governor candidate. He says, you got to keep endorsing us. And by one vote, they decided to put their own candidate up. It was kind of interesting. And they didn't get many votes. And the Working Families Party is definitely the top vote-getting third party in the state. And we had a funny thing happen in Connecticut, in New Haven, a couple of years ago. And there's a mayor race. They endorsed a candidate in the primary who lost the Democratic Party. And then they were running against a labor-supported Democrat in the general election who they didn't think was going to win the primary. So they kept the endorsement so the person could have the line. It was Mayor Tony Hart, but they actually didn't work for her. So it's complicated. And then there's another – this is tell me if it's getting too much in the weeds.
No, this is perfect. Go ahead.
The thing that really makes me nuts is I feel like we have this law that is just so dirty in Connecticut that the Democrats and Republicans passed. They said that when each town elects its registrar voters, and you and I probably don't even think that should be elected, right? That no matter what happens, the Republican and Democrat win. So if the Republican forgets to vote for themselves, they still win because they wrote a law that their people have to be in there. So if a Working Families Party candidate wins, which has happened, then the taxpayers have to pay for three registrars because of the collusion. Talk about Ticketmaster. Check out the Democrats. And the
My God.
They collude like no tomorrow on that thing. So the Working Families Party has actually elected a registrar of voters. So then the Republicans say, wait a second, aren't they really a Democrat? And then some towns have minority representation laws, like Hartford, where the second party is guaranteed some votes on the local council. So in Hartford one year, three of the nine seats went to the Working Families Party. And again, some Republicans said, is that fair play? Because they're really Democrats. And the other side said, no, they're independents trying to influence the Democrats. So long story short, they have a real agenda about like higher minimum wage, higher taxes on the rich, protections for labor unions, and they help elect people like Josh Elliott and Hamden who are going to advance those issues.
And Paul, I do get calls exactly who leading off of what you said, say, well, wait a minute. If they're a party, I have callers who say, well, okay, they stand for certain things, good for them. But a lot of people, Paul, are a little squishy about this cross-endorsement thing. Like you said, they do run candidates sometime. And I guess people don't really understand the way that works is, okay, if you're a party, where is your quote-unquote candidate? I get the feeling from my listeners that a lot of them are really not comfortable with this cross-endorsement thing.
And you know, Paul, that there are only four states in the whole country that allow cross-endorsements, New York, Oregon, South Carolina, and Connecticut. But I would argue it a little differently. I would say that's another example of collusion by the Democrats and Republicans who don't want people who don't agree with party leaders to have influence. So I can understand. I agree with your listeners. If they're not interested, if they're not feeling comfortable, of course they shouldn't vote for that. But there are other people who say, I don't really like the Democratic Party. I think they've sold out too much to corporations. So I still, though, want this person to win rather than this other person. So if I could vote for them on the Working Families Party line, then I'm voting what I believe in, which is what I want to happen in a democracy. I'd be interested what you think about this, Paul. Other people say that points up the need for ranked choice voting.
Mm-hmm.
So you vote for something you believe in rather than lesser two evils, and you're not helping to elect the person you don't want because your candidate gets eliminated in the vote counting if they don't get enough. So I think there's a more fundamental question of how in our democracy can we vote for what we believe in when we're always left with this reductive two-person choice if we care about who wins and we don't agree with either of them. So I would argue that whether you agree with Working Families, who mostly close endorse, if you agree with the Independent Party, runs their own, and the Green Party, I salute third parties. I think more people getting involved in politics and actually believing in something rather than just wanting power. I mean, you want power to accomplish aims rather than power just so you can get money, your buddies can get money. And I think it's great that we had all these candidates. You know, Paul, that I voted on six different lines this election day. I just found their candidates agreed with from all different
lines. Wow, good for you.
I feel like I lived in more of a democracy than if it were just Democrats and Republicans.
Oh, Paul, we can agree on that. That's great stuff, and bless you for six different lines there. Love that. Folks, check it out. If you don't look at the New Haven Independent regularly, you should check it out, newhavenindependent.org, online. The story that we're talking about here, Progressive Party flexes fusion muscles. Paul Bass, editor of the New Haven Independent. Paul, always good to check in with you. We'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Same here, Paul. Take it easy.
Take care. Bye-bye. Paul Bass, in case you've never read his stuff or seen his reporting, BASS, Paul Bass, a fixture in New Haven and Southern Connecticut media for years. Check it out, newhavenindependent.org. Now, it's interesting that Paul pointed out what we talk about on the show here all the time, that people are really split on this. They want more voices, but does more voices mean more actual candidates or just some sort of little hanky-panky where most of the time the Independent Party cross-endorses Republicans and most of the time the Working Families Party cross-endorses Democrats? And as Paul said, and I've always believed, maybe that's okay. Maybe if you tend to vote liberal or progressive, but you just don't like the present-day Democratic Party, or maybe if you tend to vote conservative or right of center, but you can't stand the Republicans. And I am confused. Maybe you can help me out here. We can toss this around to start things off here at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. There's an interesting story today by Ken Dixon in Hearst, Connecticut Media Publications here, and Ken's been on the show a few times previous, and it's titled "After Record Spending in the Connecticut Governor Race, Questions Arise Over the Future Spending by Wealthy Candidates," and something I've talked about, right? Well, it sure hasn't helped the Republican Party, has it? 0 for 2 with Tom Foley, 0 for 2 with Bob Stefanowski, 0 for 2 with Linda McMahon, 0 for 1 with Leora Levy, and who the heck knows will be the next offer when Chris Murphy's seat is up in 2024. So the notion here is that the Republican Party in the state, which has traditionally lagged in fundraising, you know, for the last seven statewide cycles here, has largely relied on somebody really rich to carry the moniker, and they're 0 for 7. We don't know who's going to run against Mr. Murphy here, but 0 for 4 in the governor's races here, and 0 for 3 in the Senate races. And this whole thing begs the question. Now, remember a few weeks ago, when I said, geez, you know, if we want to expand this citizens' election program, right? And there's a shot here that you're getting more of these self-funded candidates, rich people, you know, mainly rich white people like Ned Lamont, like Bob Stefanowski, like Tom Foley, like Linda McMahon, and like Leora Levy. You know, the notion is where they can spend, you know, really crazy amounts of money. You need more funding in the state, the citizens' election program, which allows you, if you can raise a small amount of seed money here, it would allow you to qualify for $9 million as the current number now, I believe, for the governor's race, $9 million to get that money from the state and run for governor, let the chips fall where they may. But, you know, Tom Foley used it once. He financed it the other time, and it was not used this time around by either Ned Lamont or Bob Stefanowski. So basically they chose to self-fund, to, germinate their campaigns. So what you ended up getting was $34 million spent. $34 million spent of personal money. Listen, you know, they can do what they want with their money. They're grown men. Ned Lamont spent $21.7 million. Bob Stefanowski spent $12.2 million. So you had 33.9 million, roughly 34 million bucks spent by two rich guys who were duking it out for governor. Again, fine. In principle, I have no problem with that. Honestly, no problem, zero problem with that. Okay? It's their money. They're allowed to do it. Now, the notion is that, you know, 8 or 9 million bucks, whatever it is, for the state's funding program would not have been enough money. And it wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have been. I mean, can you imagine, you know, being a candidate? Can you imagine if a different Republican who wasn't going to self-fund ran against Ned Lamont? Ned Lamont would have outspent them 22 million to nine. Now, the polls may have been closer if there was a better candidate, but just saying, you know. So I'm reading this story by Ken Dixon, and again, it's a good story. I recommend you read it. After record spending in the state's governor's race, questions arise over future spending by wealthy candidates. And the notion being that if you're going to get these wealthy self-funders here, you know, $9 million if you want to qualify and use the state's as the fund here. In the state, the CEP, the Citizens Election Program, the money has to be higher. And I guess in this story, they quote a couple of people as saying, hey, there is, and what did I tell you a few weeks ago, right, when we talked about this? What did I tell you? They're going to have to raise the money, and I guess they're looking to do that. They're looking to do that, and the money to run for governor, perhaps in the 2026 cycle, 4 years from now, would be $12 million, which on one hand, and here's where I said I'm confused here, and maybe you can help me out, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. On one hand, that's good, because I don't care what party it is, left, right, up, down, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, whatever, to me that's good. Because, listen, Connecticut's a very popular place with a lot of rich people. And if somebody's going to become a candidate and throw a money bomb, a money grenade, a money nuke at this thing, like Ned Lamont did, especially this time, he spent a lot the first time. But this time, you know, the guy spent almost $22 million. Again, he can do that. It's his money. I get it. But if somebody's going to do that, you really need to have something there to entice or at least get somebody to run against somebody who just may have scads of money. But here's the problem I have with this. And by the way, the Citizens Election Program is used for other offices as well. It's used for the constitutional offices. It's used for the legislative offices. And I get that. I understand that. And by the way, where do they get the money? The money. And I'm surprised and shocked that there is enough money by just, you know, these sources here. It is basically unclaimed money, unclaimed bank accounts, property of people who have no heirs in the state. So believe it or not, there is a boatload of that kind of money floating around. And I guess, you know, somebody has a lot of money, a lot of land, property, a business, and they die without a will, as a lot of people still do, and they die with, you know, no family or an estranged family or nobody marked as survivors on a will or power of attorney or something. That happens. Here's my question, though. Is it ethically right to take that unclaimed money and use it for political campaigns? And this has been bandied about before. And, of course, as Ken points out in this piece, the whole thing happened post-Roland because of some of the stuff he did, and we wanted to weed out the corruption in the state. Okay, I get it. But, you know, if you're, and again, I'm kind of trying to play devil's advocate on this, but let's say in 4 years they do raise it to $12 million apiece. And let's say you do have a candidate or two. Let's say for argument's sake, shall we say that? Let's say for argument's sake, you have two candidates running again in 2 years, and they both qualify for the public financing. So that's $24 million. Should that money that I understand, I get it, it's found money, it's money that I guess cannot be claimed by anyone. I understand that. But $24 million. Could that money be used for something better in the state? You know what I mean? I mean, listen, I understand that it costs money to get elected. I fully understand that. Radio time's not cheap. I'm in the radio business. Digital time costs money. In particular, Connecticut races are skewed for the governor's race because you got to buy New York City TV and radio time to get into listeners and viewers in Fairfield County, who are much more in a bedroom community mindset than they are of actually living in New York or Connecticut. You know what I mean? But I just got to thinking. On one hand, part of me says, yeah, raise that, raise the chunk of financing that this program provides to people to help them, you know, if they have to fight against a deep-pocketed self-funder like a Bob Stefanowski or Ned Lamont. But then again, part of me says, whatever happened to the notion of just fundraising, of having people donate to your campaign? I mean, really? $34 million spent by people who self-funded their campaigns, and then we're going to give people money to run against them. I understand the idea that you don't just want to allow somebody to carpet bomb somebody with money. I get it. But you know what? In a time where we can't have funding for this, and this program needs funding, and that program needs funding, I've always wondered, honestly. This state-funded program for elections, of which there are not a lot of states that do this, we're one of the few that do that, is that really the morally right thing to do with this found money? What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What about the days, the good old days, a far and yorn, where people just used to, you know, get donations? The state wasn't expected to pay for your campaign. I understand kind of why that was done after the Roland debacle and all that stuff, but really now? So I'm kind of torn on this. If you're going to keep it, yeah, it's got to get hiked up. You got to go 10, 11, 12 million bucks that the state will hand you to run for governor. But really, is it the job of the state to be funding campaigns? But then again, you might say, well, they have to, Paul, because you get these deep-pocketed people. Interesting conundrum, ain't it? What do you think?